Hi, this is Alina and Megan, and you're listening to Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast, where we dive into all things health, wellness, and fitness.
We are two certified athletic trainers, personal trainers, and nutrition coaches who met and graduated together from the University of Arkansas. And we want to do this podcast to spread our joy about treating our bodies well through nutrition, exercise, and knowledge.
All right. Today on Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast, we are so excited to have Emily Kybert on again. We had you on in maybe 2020. I could double check a while ago. And we don't usually ask guests to come on again unless we find them amazing, fascinating humans, which we find all of our guests to be. But sometimes people have even more to offer. So we wanted Emily to come on again to talk a little more in depth about a few things. But even before we get into that, for people who haven't listened to the first episode that you had with us, can you give us a little bit of a background on you and what you're up to right now?
Yes. Well, I'm honored to be on again. I always, you know, you and I text every week, so it's always like fun to bounce practitioner questions off each other. I've been a chiropractor since 2007. I'm kind of the chiropractor that doesn't adjust that much. Gasp. Oh my God. All the chiros just like fell over. But, you know, the more rehab, breathing, I do a lot of DNS, dynamic neuromuscular stabilization, a little bit of PRI, and some kettlebell strong first training. So the more I do of that, I find the less people need to get adjusted. And, you know, through the past couple years, I shifted my practice from a team of 10 in New York City with massive overhead to an online business for the Hashi ladies. So teaching them how to work out without burnout, using all those things I did in the clinic, and also helping chiropractors optimize their SEO, their search engine optimization, as well as create online courses themselves. So that's what I'm up to here in Boulder, Colorado. And I still go back to New York once a month because I love my patients. So I fly back, I get a little dose of like single New York, like single woman New York, even though I'm married with two kids. And I see my girlfriends and we have dinners and I see all my patients and then I fly home and do my thing with my kids and my stuff.
Sounds like a pretty cool setup, honestly.
Yeah.
I'm kind of jealous.
It is.
I'm doing amazing things.
Yeah. I mean, I am a Capricorn, so I like to be very grounded. So when I do go to New York, I get a little bit of FOMO and like, oh, should we have ever left? And then I come back to Boulder and I just like went for a 2-hour hike this morning through the snow and it's sunny and it's gorgeous. So the best of both worlds, yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you're always posting those good, beautiful mountains.
I know.
And it's just funny because I know you from New York, so I know that lifestyle and I know what that's like. And it's very different for sure.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about, let's go into how you're working with the Hashimoto's ladies and just what you've done in that community, because I think it's a community that people don't always focus on. And when they do, you can see major results as you've seen.
Yeah. So Hashimoto's is an autoimmune thyroid condition. There is a genetic component, but ultimately it's a disease of inflammation. So things that we get exposed to, maybe it's through our food, like gluten, dairy, maybe it's the things that are sprayed on our gluten, mold, parasites, heavy metal toxicity, flame retardants, all that toxic burden adds up and can pull the trigger on the autoimmune piece. The common recommendation for the Hashi ladies is to do low impact things, stretch, go for a walk, do some yoga, Pilates, low impact exercise. And my opinion in the downfall of those recommendations made by conventional medicine, as well as a lot of functional medicine doctors, is that it's not feeding the muscle tissue. And with Hashimoto's, because there is a hypothyroid component, it is harder to maintain our muscle tissue and our muscle mass. So everything that I teach the Hashi ladies is centered around feed your muscle tissue, whether it's through your protein intake. And sometimes I get pushback because some of the Hashi ladies have been taught to be like plant-based. I'm like, I have not seen a Hashi lady do well in plant-based yet. But feeding through optimal protein, resistance training, but not to the point of doing, you know, 5 days of high intensity interval training, doing it in a very strategic way so that they don't tank out, they don't burn out, they don't feel like they have to take a nap after the workout. They work out so that they don't feel like they have to be on the couch for 3 days, because a lot of women experience that. when it's maybe too high interval intensity, maybe it's too much cardio, maybe it's like too many reps, like 50 reps with a balla band or like a 2 pound weight. So I go at it from let's feed your muscle tissue without creating an overuse injury and without the burnout. So heavier, lower reps, long rest breaks. And most of the workouts are like 30 minutes, 20, 30 minutes. And then we talk about all the other things that are related, you know, behind the scenes to their two biggest struggles. They want to lose weight and they want more energy. So talking about thyroid lab panels, how to test for anemia, because anemia and Hashimoto's can often go hand in hand. And then all those environmental triggers that come into play, like parasites, mold, mycotoxins, heavy metal toxicity, which a lot of people never get told. They never even, the conversation never comes up. It's usually like, oh, you have an underactive thyroid. You have presence of thyroid antibodies. Here's some medication. I'll see you in 6 months. And I think it's a disservice. I think there's so much more that could be done, especially if the diagnosis is caught early. So if it's caught early, about 20% of women can go into remission. It doesn't mean they don't have Hashimoto's anymore. It just means they don't have the symptoms. Their labs are optimized. They feel good. They're not having crushing fatigue and hair loss. They feel good. So if it's caught early before there's too much destruction of their thyroid gland, they could go into remission. And like, what a beautiful thing to give someone. But, you know, common recommendation is like, here's some medication. I'll see you in 6 months. And I think medication has a time and place. I think if it makes you feel good, you should take it. I think there's no extra gold star for being like, I'm natural or I'm not on medication. I think if you need medication, take it. But the ultimate goal is to feel like your best self, to be present, whatever your goal is. For me, it's to be a present and patient mother for my kids. And if I'm fatigued, that does not happen. Mean mommy comes out. So
I had a couple of questions just on what you were just talking about. First of all, what is considered lower reps? Like, because obviously like high rep, I think like 20 to 30, that's like more endurance or whatever, quote unquote, hypertrophy is like 8 to 12, which we all know that's not true. It's more like what you're not doing is probably going to be hypertrophy for you. But do you mean like 3 to 5 reps or do you mean like super intense or do you mean like more of that?
Yeah. So when I talk lower reps, I talk 3 to 5. And there's kind of this spectrum of women that come to me with Hashimoto's. It's either they are very deconditioned, they sit on the couch, they have a lot of weight to lose, and maybe they hit 2,000 steps a day. And then the other spectrum is 5 days a week, high intensity interval training, type A perfectionist, and you actually need to kind of like dial them back. So I'm trying to hit kind of the sweet spot for both. So I'll start with a rep scheme of like 3 reps, 4 reps, 5 reps. Over a 6 week period, we're getting them up to like 6 to 8 reps. I don't program 8 to 12, even though I know some people talk about that as like the muscle hypertrophy. I talk to the women more about what is fatigue and trying to get that place of fatigue by the last couple reps of an perceived exertion of 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10. Or another way to think of it is by your last rep, ask yourself, do I have 2 more in the tank? Could I squeak out 2 more reps? If I could squeak out 5 more reps, you need to pick up a heavier weight. So I try to give it really simple because some of these women call the kettlebell the kettleball. So it's a lot of education and a lot of, you know.
In their defense, it does look like a ball.
It does look like a ball with a handle, not going to lie. And that's how I describe it. And then I'm like, and it's a kettlebell. But, you know, I literally have one woman, she's so cute, gone through the 6 week course, is now in the membership. There's a membership after called Stay Strong. I think she's a year into the membership. So she's been doing kettlebells for a year in 6 weeks and she still calls it a kettleball. And I just like let her roll with it. Like just roll with it. It's great.
That's so funny.
As long as she's doing it. Hey.
It's not that important, I guess.
Oh my God. She wakes up and it's the first thing she does. And then she starts her day.
Nice. The other question that I had, and you may have actually answered this because I feel like we probably talked about this on the first podcast we had with you, but why? Well, I could be wrong about this. It seems like it's pretty, Hashimoto's is common after pregnancy. Mm-hmm. Is that true? And if so, do you know why?
Yeah. So pregnancy is a load, a stressor on the body, can throw off the hormones. Usually within the first year of postpartum, a woman can get diagnosed with postpartum thyroiditis. There's just inflammation of the thyroid gland. It's interesting because a lot of OBs, including mine, only check TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone. And there's a very broad range, right? There's a conventional range that's broad. There's a functional range that's more tight, that's more optimized. But it only gives one piece of the picture of the full function of your thyroid hormones. So even, you know, I was diagnosed after having my first kid and my OB checked my TSH. She's like, you're fine. And it was outside of the optimal range. I think it was 2.94, but it was within the conventional range. So she's like, you're fine. We don't need to check anything else. You know, I didn't know better. So I think part of it is doctors are not necessarily looking for it. They're not looking at like the full picture. They're just looking at one piece of the picture. And then I think the second thing is that pregnancy is a stressor on the body. And then I think the way our society is set up to go back to work in 6 weeks or 3 weeks, you know, a lot of women don't feel the support. It's even more a stressor. It doesn't give time to recover, to nourish yourself properly, to give yourself the proper rest, you know, the sleep deprivation, all those things contribute to that inflammatory load. So super common. And I wish it was diagnosed more often. Usually postpartum thyroiditis will self-resolve within 12 months. But if someone's still not feeling good and their kid's like 7 years old, it's time to look deeper. Yeah. Or even 2 years old. I got diagnosed when my kid was 18 months old postpartum. So,
and you're like, all the stuff that you've learned from this experience, you ended up learning a lot about mold. So I kind of want to transition a little into that, because we did talk a lot about thyroid and Hashi's on the first podcast. So I'm going to link that in the show notes. So if people are more interested in Hashimoto's, they can definitely check that out. But we haven't had anybody on here to talk about mold yet. Oh, and I know. And you have some experiences with mold. I know this because I had an experience with mold 3 weeks ago. And literally, as I was standing there, I was like, I just have to call Emily. And I did. And you really helped me. So, and we could talk a little about that. Yeah. But let's talk about your experience.
So going through starting to, you know, when you're first diagnosed, you do the baseline, clean up what you're eating, change how you're working out. Cause I was doing like double soul cycle classes, or I do a soul cycle class and then a Barry's boot camp. I was over training. I was tanking myself out. And then you optimize your sleep and maybe you optimize, you know, some medication. So those kind of like the baseline starting point. And then you get that dialed in. You're like, okay, I still feel like not so great, super fatigued, crashing on the couch every day at 2. What else? So working with Dr. Gabrielle Lyon, who, you know, she's my functional medicine doc and both of our friend, she's like, all right, we're going to start to deep dive into these other things. And one of those things was mold. So she did a urine mycotoxin test. Vibrant Health has one. Great Plains Lab has another one, and came back with mycotoxins. And she's like, that's weird. Where would you be getting exposed? So then brought in a mold inspector into my condo in Brooklyn, and then one into the office in Manhattan. And the mold inspector took air samples, took outside air samples and indoor air samples to compare indoor and outdoor. And then also did an ERMI test, which is basically taking a cloth and wiping 20 square feet of different surfaces throughout the apartment. And then it will tell you which mold species specifically come up. And it was like Stachybotrys, which is kind of the quote unquote black mold, Aspergillus. And there were two spots in our apartment. One was by a window. It was a 20-foot window. And every time it rained, there would be this water stain. We brought in contractors, like things to elevate them so they could redo the caulking. They redid the caulking 5 times and it's still leaked every time it rained. I was like, you know, the building's not going to take out these 20-foot windows and double check to see what's going on. And then the other spot was in our laundry room. It smelled like a musty smell, not normal. So if you smell something, that's a sign. Other signs would be if there's two pieces of drywall starting to kind of pull apart, you'll see a seam. If you see a rusty nail punching through drywall, that's a sign. If you start to see molding, like at the bottom of the floor, start to pull away from the wall, that's a sign. So all these signs were coming up and it smelled, and we remediated. We literally moved out everything out, moved into a friend's apartment for 3 months, remediated, pulled out walls, was looking for mold. We pulled out some water damaged material and put the drywall back up and it still smelled. And I could, you know, they do a post air sample and it's like, oh, the Stachybotrys, the black mold is gone. But Stachybotrys is really a heavy, sticky mold. So when it comes up high, it means there's high concentrations. And I think it was the roof, right? Because every roof in New York City is flat and no one ever checks a roof and there's always leaks. And I think there was water leaking down from the roof through 3 floors down to our apartment. And ultimately, I was sick. My kiddo was sick, like neurological, like neural inflammation. He'd wake up, he'd be really angry. He'd want to fight. And he got this big ring around his mouth of eczema, and he would just be angry and raging all day. And I was like, oh my God, does my kid have PANS or PANDAS? And so ultimately, we remediated twice. We sold the apartment and we left. And his symptoms cleared up in 3 weeks. So that was our moldy New York story. We bought a house in Boulder, had water damage, renovating and going through that process also has mold. We're in a rental right now. There's mold in the attic. Like, mold is everywhere. So to remove yourself from the environment, which would be the ideal, is very challenging. I remember being in New York, I'd walk into a bodega, there'd be a massive brown water stain. I'm like, oh, there's mold in here probably. Because mold can grow within 24 hours of water damage. So I think part of it is to train your nervous system not to freak out, which has been a process. I think another part of it is to create resilience within your terrain. Like, how can you optimize your gut health to the point as best you can if you're living in it and you can't remediate? So it's been a journey. I'm like, oh my God. And then I think about to my childhood, you know, Alina and I talk about this, yeah. Like, oh, like your house flooded every yeah. spring, you know?
Yeah. Because when we bought our house on Long Island, we bought it from somebody who painted the entire basement every winter. And we didn't know why the basement was painted red. And so once we moved in, I was 10, we realized that the basement floods every single year. And when I'm home in New York, I was home for a while this summer, 3 months, I had eczema. And I haven't had eczema in 2 years, 3 years. But yeah, I didn't even know all this about your experience. I knew that you had moved and stuff, but I didn't know the in-depth like measures you took to remediate. And I mean, you become so knowledgeable on this because it's your life. And that's why when this happened with my car, which basically when I got back to Texas, my car was filled with mold from some water exposure that got into my car. I called you and
covered like it was its own microbiome of
growth. And that's why I immediately called you. I was in the parking lot when I called you with the doors open. And I think you were like, well, shut the doors.
And what happened, right? So you got some exposure, inhalation.
And I was coughing for 2 days straight.
Yeah.
And people, I talked to a couple people and they were just like, it's fine. Trust me, just wipe it off. And you were like, sell the car, get out of that car, get a new car, do not go in that car. And then when I started to realize how toxic it was, and also I noticed that I was pretty sick. I had insomnia for an entire night. I did not sleep until like 4 a.m. And I realized that, wow, this is so toxic. And maybe some people react more, but I'm one of those people too. So I'm going to get a new car. And that was, you know, a decision I made. But without that knowledge, I think a lot of people would have just remediated the car. And really, can you really remediate a car? Can you really remediate anything truly? And I don't think so.
Yeah. So going back to your insomnia, right? So a lot of people think mold is like, oh, runny nose, itchy eyes, sneezing. So you had exposure to mold, you had insomnia, right? So there's an H3 histamine response that causes insomnia. It's why a lot of doctors will recommend an antihistamine at night to help you sleep if you have insomnia. Versus, okay, why do you have insomnia?
Yeah.
Oh, because you got exposed to mold. Oh, so it's kind of a quick fix, like take an antihistamine before you go to bed, you'll sleep better, decrease that histamine response. But kind of the next step is like, okay, well, why are you getting that?
Yeah.
Other things that people don't think about when they're exposed to mold is eczema, skin reactions, a histamine intolerance. So I used to eat and my tongue would burn and the eczema on my hand would burn. Like I wanted to cut off my hand. It burned so bad. I haven't had eczema in years, partially from detoxing and working on my gut health, even though I'm in a house right now that has some water damage and mold in the attic. That hasn't come back, luckily, but it's a real thing, the fatigue. And the thing with Hashimoto's and mold is the symptoms are almost identical. Mold has a little bit more symptoms. So it's like unexplained weight gain, unexplained fatigue, hair loss, dry skin, brain fog. All those things are mold symptoms too.
They're just like going where you're like, your nervous system's going all the time and you can't take a nap. That type of symptom I feel like is also like a Hashi's just nervous system. I felt like that too after, I mean,
like the wired but tired.
Yeah, wired but tired. Yeah, that's the word for it. It's just very fascinating.
So I have my Therasage sauna in our living room. I travel with binders. So yeah. I travel with cholestyramine, charcoal, chlorella, because hotel rooms, notorious. I've gone to the most beautiful hotels in New York. And I'm like, this place has like, there's water damage. Ask for another room. There's water damage. And I now actually travel with an air doctor. So I usually like to travel light, but now I check a suitcase in with an air doctor, which sounds crazy.
Wow.
But it, you know, if you're going to be somewhere and you're going to, like, if you go to a conference, you know, if you go to a PRI conference and you need your mental capacity to be high level and you're in mold and you're super brain foggy and you can't even like connect two dots, maybe the air filter will make a difference if you're staying in that hotel for 3 days. So binders, air filter. Yeah. I travel with those all the time.
So for people that, cause obviously it's like impossible, as you said, to avoid all the mold that's just ubiquitous. And I'm sure it's more so in places like I live in Washington State and it's damp over here all the year. So I'm sure there's tons of mold here. What are your like recommendations that are like really accessible for people to just like make their terrain, their internal terrain, more resilient to things like this? Because I feel like we must all be exposed to it. And like some of us, like I might have some problems, but I'm not aware of any of them. Like I feel pretty good, but I'm sure I'm being exposed. So I'm just wondering why it is that some people will have a lot of problems and other people will not.
Yeah. Some people have the genetic SNPs to be more sensitive to mold. Some people have genetic SNPs where they're not as good at the two different phases of liver detox. So I am not a I'm not good at type 2 liver detoxification. And I have the genetic SNPs that make me sensitive to mold and mycotoxins. So I think some of the simple things to do would be to just have things that help open up your detoxification pathways. One of them, like you got to poop. So, you know, whether it's taking magnesium at night, taking CellCore, bowel mover, like just getting the bowels moving. So you're pooping out stuff, making sure you're sweating, whether that's you're working out or you're jumping in a sauna, having binders on hand if you need them. So like I'll get in my sauna and then I'll take some chlorella charcoal afterwards. Dry brushing, helping move the lymph, just another way of opening up the pathway of detoxification. And then air filter. So I have an air filter in every single room of our house. I have like 8 air filters. Wow. Half of them are IntelliPure, half of them are air doctors. And when we go, like for the summer, we drove across the country and we stayed in Amagansett, which is out in Long Island. I brought 3 air filters and basically took up half the car. Oh my gosh. My husband's like, what about the kids and their clothes? I was like, don't worry, I got it. Like,
important.
Oh my gosh. That's awesome.
And I'm vigilant about it because I also think of my kids. You know, my kids probably have my genetics. I know my older one definitely does. And, you know, for them, their little bodies, it's more of a load on them than it is on me. They're such, you know, they're like 40 pounds. So those are kind of my quick, easy, actionable items. I take things to just, you know, I take omegas, I take vitamin D, I'm trying to optimize. I take glutathione and then I take N-acetylcysteine, NAC, which is the precursor for your body's own making of glutathione. I get an occasional, maybe once a quarter. I wish it was every week. A glutathione push and an IV drip with a Meyer cocktail. So I do all the things that I can because I know exposure is inevitable. So when I used to get exposed, 20 minutes, shut down, needed to take a nap, could not finish a sentence. Like literally was a robot that got turned off and would lay on the living room floor. Now I can get exposed and still function, but I have all the tools. So
Oh, those are great tools to like give out to people because people don't know what to do. They might know that this is a problem, but they don't know what to do. Can you actually touch on dry brushing? Because I just bought a dry brush.
Yeah.
And I've never really done it. I read about it, but the bristles are very hard. And I don't know if I just didn't get a soft enough dry brush.
There's different ones. Some have longer bristles, which are a little more forgiving. And then some have really short ones. And you're like, ooh, this is brutal.
Yeah.
But you want to like open up termini through here. And then you want to brush from like, you never want to brush away
far to close.
Heart.
Yeah.
You go towards the heart and you can do little circles. You can do gentle. You want to definitely get in the armpit, like towards the breast. Don't just do the arm because then you will literally get swollen lymph nodes like in your armpit.
Don't you? you want to open up like the most central proximal areas first, too, right? To give it something to go.
So you'll go like right above the clavicles and then, and you can build towards a stronger brush.
Yeah, I think I need to repurchase a new brush. Maybe I'm just sensitive too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it definitely is not like a feel good massage. It's like, trying to superficially.
It's pretty scratchy.
It's scratchy. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Good info for people. Good info for me. Let's see. Megan, any questions on mold? Because I think you covered it really well. There's definitely different species that I saw in my car. I was like, whoa, this is wild. There's multiple species.
Yeah. Are there species? Everyone thinks like black mold is black. Like mold comes in all colors. It comes in white, it comes in red, it comes in green. And there's different binders that go with different molds and mycotoxins. Mm. So like if one person is only using one thing, there's different ones that go for different species. So it's important to know what's in your body. So urine mycotoxin test, the downfall of a urine mycotoxin test, it will also pick up molds that you have eaten potentially. So if you're eating strawberries or drinking moldy coffee, I don't know if you've ever drinking coffee and you feel like you need a nap, it probably has some mold in it. So I've tailored my coffee. Mm-hmm. So like I love an iced cortado. It like fills my soul, but it makes me anxious and sweaty and gives me like sweaty, stinky sweats. So I'll drink green Sun Up coffee, which is roasted different. So the roasting process can lead to mold. Mm-hmm. So Sun Up green coffee tastes like tea, doesn't taste like coffee. I've been trying strong coffee and then Purity coffee.
Oh, there's brands?
Yeah, different brands.
Cool. I've heard about the green Sun Up one. I've heard about it from multiple people. I've heard
like coffee?
What?
Is that like a white coffee? The green Sun Up one?
It's green. So they don't roast the beans the same way. They leave the coffee beans green.
Got it. There's a lot of caffeine in that too.
Yeah. So like one container is about 2 cups, but it doesn't make you anxious and it doesn't give you the 2 p.m. crash. Like I feel like clear, good, consistent. I'm not crashing at the end of the day. So the one downfall with the mycotoxin urine test is sometimes it can pick up mold from what you're ingesting. Mm. There's another test that's a blood draw called My Myco Lab. Mm-hmm. That one looks for antibodies for mycotoxins.
Okay.
The medical director is named Andrew Campbell. He's an MD. He was on Thyroid Strong podcast, my podcast.
Oh, awesome. But
yeah. So he's very not into urine mycotoxin tests. I asked a couple of my mold friends, like Jill Krista. She's like, in an ideal world, you would do both. You would do a urine mycotoxin test and then you do the blood one. But obviously, you know, each of those are about 500, you know,
it's up. So. It definitely adds up. Plus, if you're going to do any sort of remediation, that's going to add up. Or if you're going to move, that's a really hard thing for people to have to understand. Because I can't imagine a house. My situation was a car, even though I know my house is filled with mold.
Well, your mom's house.
My parents' house. Yeah. And like, that's not something I think that people are so quick to be open to unless they're really struggling. Like you were.
Yeah. Yeah. And at the time we had the financial means to be like, all right, we're going to sell. We're going to move.
Yeah.
Moving sucks. Like packing all your stuff. You know, some people recommend throwing out everything. I have not had to do that. I think some people could replace their mattresses, right? Because the mycotoxins get stuck in those like foamy, you know, and then when you lay on it, it kind of like sprays them up. So, but I've had multiple friends who are naturopaths or functional medicine docs get rid of all their stuff and restart over in a new place, which is a lot. It's a lot. Remediation, tens of thousands. Like you could do a 30,000, 50,000 remediation.
Wow. Didn't you have a situation with your storage unit as well? Was that your
storage unit?
Yeah. Didn't your storage unit have water damage?
So
I remember you telling me this and now I'm like, you've had the worst like luck with mold, but at the same time, it's made you very educated on it.
I know. It's my kryptonite. And at the same time, I'm like, divine, what is the lesson? Like, what is the lesson? So when we moved from Brooklyn, we sold our condo, we put everything in storage and we went to go look at a house in Boulder. And we put everything in storage. And then 2 days later, I just went to check on the unit and it was facing an outer wall and it was downpouring, like hurricane downpouring in Brooklyn. And there was water coming through the windows onto our boxes. And every single unit that was facing that wall of windows, I mean, it must have been, you know, 100 and I mean, it was hundreds of units facing these windows. All the water just coming in through the window, on the floor, going into the, everyone else's units. And I go to the front desk guy. I was like, dude, you have to move my stuff to like an inner unit that's not near the window right now. He's like, okay. But if I hadn't gone, all of our stuff would be covered in mold. We would have had to get rid of it.
Wow.
So yeah, I know it's my kryptonite. And at the same time, I'm trying to figure out why it keeps coming up in my life. I'm like, am I a soggy, watery person?
No, you're a Capricorn.
I'm a Capricorn. That doesn't make sense.
That's wild. So, wow. Yeah. Let's transition into what you're doing lately. Obviously, you're in Colorado. You're in a completely different lifestyle, but you're also kind of transforming a little bit in what you're doing for public, for the masses, and what you're educating on, because you have had a lot of experience with SEO. And so why don't we talk about that and how it relates to practitioners and what you're doing?
Yeah. So with my clinic in New York, I worked on search engine optimization, which is ultimately how people find you on Google, and did it for 12 years. And I have not updated new content on the website since March of 2020. So over 2 years. I still get 20,000 unique visitors a day, or a month, sorry.
Yeah.
And I get probably 10 new patient inquiries a week. And I don't entertain them, even though I should.
Send them over. I'm coming to New York.
Because I'm not in New York. And, you know, all that work to get clarity on keywords to, you know, the whole point of search engine optimization is to have the people that you want to see, your dream clients, find you by using those words and verbiage on your website and tagging your, you know, your photos properly. So when you take a course through some of the big SEO companies, so like Yoast, HubSpot, they're very technical because they are made for marketers, for big, large, you know, 500 person companies. They're not made for the little guy. So how could, I was like, okay, how could I teach a chiro or a practitioner who basically sees patients all day and does not have time to be sitting around, you know, deep diving for hours and hours on week into search engine? How can it be made really easy, really accessible to make, you know, how can you do like pull like little levers and do baby steps so that you can get your page ultimately on the first page of Google search? Because, you know, they talk about like the second page of Google is where like pages go to die. Like no one goes, they're not like, oh, I search and then I'm going to go to the second page. They're just, what's on the first page? So that's usually the first 10 results. And how can you do like even simple things as like geotagging your photos or labeling them properly with keywords so that when someone searches, that photo comes up, or how to place the proper title tag on your home site, or how to place the proper H1, you know, don't name it your clinic. That's wasted space. That's like your Google billboard. You don't want to put your clinic name. You want to search. You want people, you want to use the verbiage of what people are looking for that are your people. So if it's like Denver's best prenatal chiropractor, like if those are the people you want to treat, that needs to be on the H1 of your homepage. Little things like that, that a practitioner could move the needle and be found. And the ultimate goal is really to have the practice that they want, the freedom that they want, treating the people they want to see. And we all have those people, right? Like we have the people on their schedule. We're like, oh, God, okay. You gotta like psych yourself up to see that kind of person. And then you have people on your schedule. You're like, oh, so glad Lori's on my schedule. I have like 10 of Lori's, you know, like you want more of those people. And what are those Lori's looking for? And what are those people searching for? And what qualities do they have? So that is in the works for the health practitioners, as well as course creation. So when I closed my clinic in New York, it was a 7-figure clinic and basically went to being a stay-at-home mom during COVID. And I had the online piece. It was on the side. And for 2021, I kind of mourned and sat around and mourned the closing of the clinic. And it was just running on autopilot, and it made, I think it was like 35 grand. Just, I did nothing. I just sat. No, so I was not on social. And then 2022 rolled around. I was like, okay, this is interesting. Maybe there's something here. Maybe I should stop mourning and get off the couch and do something. And so I showed up on social. I, you know, talked to different mentors, different friends that have online businesses, tried different things like a masterclass versus a challenge, a paid masterclass, a paid challenge. And turned that business into a six-figure business. So I think, you know, and I don't go into an office. I drop my kids off at school. I pick them up. You know, I drop them off at 8. I pick them up at 3. And I do all that work that I need to do in between. And I get to reach people all over. There's someone in Hungary, the UK, the Yukon, Alaska, like all over the world doing this program. And I think that's really cool. And I think, you know, in a dream world, every single one of those women would have access to an amazing, knowledgeable functional medicine doctor, but they don't. So how can you start to educate them to ask better questions of their doctors or help them find a doctor that resonates with them so that they can start to dissect, right? Like, how many people have ever had their endocrinologist be like, hey, have you ever had water damage? Did your house flood every spring? You know? So those kind of questions, to just plant the seed in their head so they can ask better questions from their provider. So now, you know, the goal is a lot of chiropractors, and I'm sure PTs, OTs, you know, across the board, feel chained, like have the golden handcuffs to their business and are chained to, is there going to be another outbreak? Is there going to be a snow day? And my schedule of 40 just went to like 2 today in Colorado. So giving them the other options to have revenue, to have a broader reach, to give them the freedom that they want. You know, I used to work 12-hour days. I did not see my kid for the first 3 years. And now I pick them up and I get the after-school download, which is so important because no one else gets that. I'm like, did you know Elvie said this about his friend and his friend? And like, this happened. He's like, no, I didn't know that. Well, he didn't get the after-school download. So, you know, I think if I didn't have kids, life would be different. And I'd be working 12-hour days still, but that's not my life right now. And I want to be there for my kids and I want to get the after-school download and I want to, you know, go have a snowball fight with them. So having that online piece gives that freedom.
Yeah, it's like work-life balance. And it's not feasible to work 12-hour days your entire life. And when you're a business owner and all you do is work with only people in person, you get stuck to only being in the clinic and just what you just said. So you have to have other methods. Yeah. It's definitely something that I think a lot of providers have on their mind and just how they can differentiate themselves from other providers and do something different.
Yeah.
That's marketable.
I think everyone wants to get nitty gritty on the tech. Like, it's the first question I ask. So I just hosted a dinner in Denver for 14 chiropractors down in Denver, all females. And they're all like, let's dive into the tech. And I go, that's great. We will. But first things first, you don't have a product if you don't have a solution. And you don't have a solution if you don't know who your person is.
Yeah.
So let's get really clear on who's your person and who you want to serve and who resonates with you. And then I started to give them different tech things that I've seen. So I have a friend, because everyone thinks it needs to be on like this beautiful platform and it needs to be perfect the first time around. And the first version is never going to be the final version. I've gone through 4 different iterations of my program.
Yeah.
Just elevating it based on feedback I've gotten. Mm-hmm. So I have a friend, he does a monthly challenge. He gets 500 people at $100 into his challenge every month.
Amazing.
He has videos in a Dropbox folder. He writes the program on a Word doc in a Dropbox folder. You get access to that Dropbox folder. And after that first month, it goes away.
Yeah.
That is like low budge. There's
awesome.
Awesome.
Not even paying for like Train Heroic or like an app.
Yeah, exactly. There's a woman I just met last weekend, Daniel Pacente. She does a PDF, 6-week workout PDF, and she launches twice a year and she has multi-6-figure business. There's no videos, which I'm like, you don't do videos? That's insane. Oh, she's like, yep, this is what's worked. And then, you know, I have friends who launch every 10 weeks, 8 to 10 weeks, and they have 200 to 500 people sign up for their program and they go live 3 times a week. And that's their version of it. And if you miss the live recording, then you get the replay after. So there's so many ways to do it. Mine's more of a DIY. Everything's pre-recorded.
Yeah.
I show up once a week for 30 minutes to talk about modifications or let's check your form or, hey, I'm feeling really fatigued. Let's modify. And I just show up on Zoom and whoever wants to show up that's in the program shows up.
It's great.
And it's very DIY. And I launch 3 times a year and that's turned into like a 6-figure business. So, you know, all the other time in between launching is nurturing your audience, you know, building that like, know, trust.
Mm-hmm.
and putting content out there so that when you do put your offer out there, it's a no-brainer for people who want it, right? It shouldn't be feeling like you're selling, like you're trying to convince someone. It's you've given all your tips, all your info, all the what and the why, and the program is the how to execute on it. So, you know, all the time in between putting the program out there is building that trust.
It's just great because you're able to help clinicians in a very different way that other people aren't really, you know, really doing.
Yeah. But okay, going back to SEO, so Google, top search engine. Second, YouTube, right?
Owned by Google. We were talking about this right before.
Right? So YouTube 2023 is all about prioritizing podcasts and YouTube shorts because they want to compete with TikTok and Instagram Reels. Yeah. So YouTube will pick up the words that you say on the video and use it for search engine optimization. Hmm. TikTok also gets crawled by Google. Facebook does. LinkedIn does. Twitter is a great search engine. No one ever thinks about that. Instagram does not get crawled by Google. So you could literally use those keywords in all those other social platforms and Google is crawling it and indexing it and using it for search engine optimization, but it doesn't do it for Instagram.
Why not?
So it's interesting, like probably because Instagram's it's not a Google product and it doesn't have the integration yet. Like TikTok literally just last month now got crawled by Google. So when you put a caption in TikTok, you want to use your keywords, whatever words you say within like the first 10 seconds, you want those to be the words that your person would be searching.
Mm.
So I try to always use Hashimoto's, weight loss, fatigue, like in the first verbiage. And then in YouTube videos, they now have chapters. So I don't know if you've ever searched and you're like, how do I pick a lock? And it will literally show in the search engine on Google, like 20 minutes into a video.
Yeah.
Because someone put that, how to pick a lock, in the chapter of the YouTube video. So YouTube just introduced chapters. Now they're using that for search engine. So it's interesting because a lot of people want to create the course, but if you create the course and you're driving that person to a place to land your webpage and your webpage is not optimized, it's like you didn't do step one before doing step two. So I like to get all the search engine going, get your Google Analytics set up, your Google Search Console, having keywords in a blog post, in videos you're posting, and then start to work on your course. Whereas everyone's like, what tech do I use for my course? I'm like, let's talk about your keywords that the person is typing to find you.
Yeah. I mean, you looked over my website like 3 weeks ago and you were like, you need to fix this. So I did. I did most of what you told me, a couple things, and like got like 100 or 200 more hits of unique visitors on my Google page, which was interesting.
But you had the analytics set up so that you could use the data to inform your decisions.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of us are like, oh, I got to change this and I got to change this. It's like, just use the data to tell you what to change.
Yeah.
So
it's fascinating.
So for example, there's certain tools that you can use to look for what people are searching. One of them is called Answer the Public. It's by Neil Patel. He has a big search engine company agency. And when you search Hashimoto's weight loss, it gets less hits than thyroid weight loss. So people are actually looking for more like hypothyroid weight loss versus Hashi weight loss. So I was like, oh, okay, I need to start changing my language because I've been writing about Hashimoto's for so long. I have those key pieces of content. Now I need to kind of expand to the women who don't know that their hypothyroid could be caused by Hashimoto's, which 90% of hypothyroidism has an autoimmune component.
Oh, wow.
But a lot of women don't know because doctors don't test. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, now I need to kind of change how I'm writing my blog posts, how I'm putting my content out there to hypothyroid or, hey, do you have a thyroid condition? Including the social media post. So a lot of people look at search engine and they're like, oh God, what a drag.
Yeah.
It is like, how cool can it be that you could be like, okay, how am I going to say this real based on what people are searching? Because you want to reach your people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those dream people. You don't want like the person that's dragging you down. You want to reach your dream people. So what words are they using? A 60-year-old post-menopausal woman is going to use very different verbiage than a 30-year-old who just got diagnosed postpartum. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Super informative.
It's informative and it's like, it's so daunting, like, especially as people who like want to have at least a component of their business be virtual or at least searchable virtually. Like, it's daunting and it's annoying to have to like play all these games, but it's also empowering once you know that you can do things to like help, you know, bring people to your page and et cetera. So
yeah. And if you're going to take the time to write a blog post, average blog post takes 8 hours to write. And that's like a writer, a content writer. Yeah. And you're going to write it yourself and your voice is going to be in there and people are going to love your voice. But there's a formula that changes sometimes of like, how do you write your first sentence? How do you put your H1, your H2, your H3? You know, so when you're writing a blog post and there's like that title that's a little darker and that leads into a paragraph, mm-hmm. Google loves, because there's now Alexa and Google Home, that title is asked in a question form as if someone asked Alexa. So mm-hmm. now you can start to tweak those H2 titles to, instead of, I'm trying to think of an example, like instead of saying Hashimoto's and weight loss, it says, how do I lose weight with Hashimoto's? Because that's what someone would be asking Siri, right? Or Alexa or Google Home. So you can start to kind of play with the language. And if you're going to take the time, like take 8 hours to write a blog post, might as well make it SEO optimized, right?
True. If you're actually going to be doing this stuff and spending time on the computer, you might as well be putting your all into it versus not getting, you know, it needs to get out there. That's the point of writing a blog, or that's the point of putting your stuff up.
Yeah. And what's the ultimate goal? The ultimate goal is to educate someone, but from a person who has an online business that wants to share their knowledge, the ultimate goal is not to get more likes or saves or shares. It's to get, right? Because what was that one day where like Facebook and Instagram like disappeared for?
Oh my God. Yeah.
It's like, the ultimate goal is to get that person on your email list.
Yeah.
And get them in your ecosystem, to email them like they're your friend. Like, so I know a lot of us are like, okay, I got to go create a reel to put more, but it's like, what's the goal of that? The goal of that is to kind of like bring that person in, get them in your ecosystem.
I mean,
have them
sense.
Give you their email.
Yeah.
And then nurture them and love up on them until when you do put something out into the ether, you're like, hey, I have this program, by the way, that could help you. They're like, yes, that's for me. I want it. I will pay whatever for it.
Yeah.
So
great points.
Yeah. Make you think.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And I'm like sitting so overwhelmed because I'm about to have a full-time job that has nothing to do with my like personal business. And I want to be taking advantage of all these things. So I might be reaching out to you, Emily.
Okay. You're on Instagram, right?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have a link in bio?
Yes.
What do you use?
What do you mean?
Linktree?
Linktree. And then there's a couple different links on there.
Okay. So one simple thing, because mm-hmm. we all do this. I did this. So when you put Linktree, you are literally giving all your search engine traffic to Linktree. Mm. So
my mouth just dropped. What? My mouth just dropped.
It's helpful for either our audience or that this is cut out, because I don't know if it's going to be that helpful.
No. People will like this. People will like this.
You can get it. Oh, good.
So, that's crazy about Linktree.
So I'm trying to give one simple thing. Okay. So one simple thing. We all have Instagram. We're all trying to nurture our people on Instagram. We're all like, hey, check out the link in our bio. And then it goes to Linktree. And mm-hmm. then you're literally giving all your traffic and all your engagement to Linktree. So what if you did alinacanner.com/link? And instead of driving them to Linktree, you just built a page and it just had all your links and it drove to your website and gave your website your traffic instead of Linktree.
Smart.
I hope Linktree is not a sponsor.
They're not a sponsor.
They don't do anything for us, apparently.
One simple change versus being like, oh my God, I got like search all these keywords and write a blog. You know, just change that.
Okay, so check back my Instagram in 4 hours. And that
I know I have a meeting right after this, but I will definitely be doing this.
I think people will really appreciate that, to hear that.
Yeah, there's other clinicians on here for sure.
Yeah, there's tons of people that listen. And I think that that's something that you've researched. That's how you know this stuff. You've clearly learned it. But you're going to be doing a course on this for clinicians, right? So
yes, in January 2023. I'm thinking about teaching. I have it all outlined. I'm going to teach it live. And then I'll probably put it in the online format so people can do it DIY.
Awesome. So we will promote it for you also on our Move Your BB stuff, once it's out, help you with the SEO for it.
I do have an opt-in if people are interested.
Great.
A very basic course creation. I'll give you the link.
Yeah, perfect.
I think it's dremilykyber.com/Kyro course.
Awesome.
But it's really for any clinician.
Yeah. Awesome. Great.
This was
crazy informative.
I'm like, no one knows this.
Like in so many different ways.
Like from one, we're here with one topic. We're here with another topic. It was really great.
Mold to SEO. That should be the title of this. Sucking everybody. They'll just be like, what are they talking about?
This was so awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on again. We really appreciate your time. We really appreciate your knowledge.
Thanks for having me. I always love, 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 love sitting down with you guys.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast. Join in every week as we release new episodes.
Subscribe or leave us a rating at Apple Podcasts. If you have questions or topics to cover, please email moveyourbb@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram @moveyourbb.